Blog Talk
Good evening,
Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, David Murphy, with the National Black Unity News. We want to welcome everybody who's already on the call with us, and for those who are on Facebook Live, as well as Blog Talk Radio. And we will be sharing this with other groups on the Facebook format and probably YouTube as well. And so again, this is Monday evening. We have a special guest with us tonight. He will share some information about some of the things that he's done and still doing, where he's been and where he's going. And we're also going to have a little open discussion about this vaccine, take it or not. Or like I said, we're going to have open discussion about that, and then we would have a little bit about open mic tonight. But as always, we'd like to bring our brother, Baba Satawi Jahi, on because he has always have a reading, positive, informative information that can enhance our quality of life. Baba Satawi Jahi, are you ready, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right, you got it, sir.
Okay, as we do each and every week when we come on here, one, we'd like to give thanks to the 50,000-plus people who have listened to a show on Blog Talk format of Home-Based Business 101. And we just want to thank all of those people. And we also want to thank the listening audience we have for the National Black Unity News podcast. And we do, each and every time we open up this show, we do a reading from Daily Motivations for African-American Success by Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, who's also the author of Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. Reading for the day, December 14th, Working It Out. The successful man will look for work even after he has found a job. Joshua Smith, founder of the Maxima Corporation. Reading for the day, have you ever noticed that the longer you put something off, the more difficult it is to get started? Ironically, we deliberately add to the frustration and unhappiness in our lives that we could so clearly avoid. A person carrying heavy burdens can manage as long as he keeps moving, marching forward. The moment he stops and sits down to rest, his or her burden becomes heavier. The distance to be traveled seems greater, and the work becomes much more unpleasant. It's moments like these that lead us to believe there's just no way out of overcoming our circumstances, of digging out. But there is. Pick the task that seems most difficult and crucial to your goals and simply begin. Just by plugging in, you'll feel better, and you will find that your obstacles are not as insurmountable as you imagine. Keep at it, and before long, that pile of tasks that at one time seemed so overwhelming is now behind you. But isn't the struggle itself that overtakes us? It's dwelling on how difficult the task is going to be. The process of fretting over our dilemma drains us emotionally. The delay making decision, hoping that somehow, through some miracle, our problem will disappear. All growth depends on activity. There is no personal growth without effort, and effort means work. Effort is not a curse. It's a prerequisite of success, the true measure of civilization. The Creator God didn't burden us with work. He blessed us with it. Today I will engage in my work and thereby ease my burden, because inch by inch is a cinch, and the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. So it's important that we learn how to organize our tasks and then do something on it each and every day. No matter how little it might seem, if you chip away and chip away, eventually, you know, it's like I had a task I had to complete, and I finally got it completed today. And, you know, that was good. You know, and I felt good about it. It was like I had a sigh of relief in the end, you know, when it was done. And I was able to let Cynthia and my sister, Lord Kim, know, hey, I completed the task that I needed to get done. And, you know, so we all were happy and excited and, you know, celebrated that and looking forward to the results of that task. So you know, just make sure that you do not abandon the task, you know. And I know Fran knows a lot about that, is that, you know, that the most important thing to getting something done, as they say, just do it. You know, if it's, if no more than just a little bit each and every day, and you'll get it done. And with that said, David, I'm going to turn the show back over to you. And again, I want to thank everybody.
Brother, you got to stay out of my head, man. And, you know, like I say, you know, especially around this time of the fourth season, you know, of this quarter, you know, this is the time where I start laying out the publication for the next issue. And then I look at all the things that need to be done or should be done. And sometimes it seems overwhelming. And you get a little stressed out sometimes. But I don't know, something about me is I like pressure for some reason. You know, I work better. I don't know what that's about. But it would be nice just to take your time and have things in order. And I guess that was much easier. And I guess I probably could be more productive that way. But, brother, I really needed to hear that, and I'm quite sure I'm not by myself because, like I say, a lot of people, when they look at what they must, that they need to do, it may seem overwhelming sometimes, and we defeat ourselves from the onset before we even get started. And sometimes, like I say, we start procrastinating and doing all other things, and the tasks go by the wayside. And then we wonder how we got ourselves in these situations. But again, brother, I thank you so much for that reading because I desperately needed it. But tonight, because there's several other things, but tonight, because this brother always busy, so I don't want to hold him, you know, because this brother is a true soldier. And I've been knowing this brother for a long time now, you know, over 20-something years, maybe longer. And so he did his field work, his basic training. The brother been on the front lines, behind the scenes. The brother traveled all over the world. The brother all over the country. He's here, there. He's everywhere. that brother moves. And I always had a high thing of respect for this brother because, like I say, because he is a soldier and he weathered the storm just like most of us who are soldiers out there. You know, we had to go through many ordeals and when you're in warfare, sometimes you get wounded, you know, but you have to get back up and keep on running. And this brother is a runner. He's a soldier, and his name is Brother Haki Amin. And a lot of you may know he's also known as the Success Scholar. And like I say, he's a good brother, civil servant, soldier, and quite a few other things. But Brother Haki, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. Good evening, everybody. Mic check. How I'm sounding?
Sound great, sir.
Okay, I got this new mic, brother, just for you. First time using it here, so.
Sound good, too. Sound good. All
well,
right.
Yeah, thank you. And see Fran and Brother Dempsey, Baba Jahai, Sati, so, and a few other people that's on. Of course, you know, the National Black Unity News movement, shall I say, is very near and dear to me. I always try to get on and encourage people and put my articles in when I certainly can, and definitely coming up here in the January edition, I look forward to sharing something, as I already sent the article, just in terms of my recent travels and experiences. So I will certainly first give just a brief intro for those that may not know me, Haki Amin, the Success Scholar. That's what I've been going by. Of course, we all go through our transformations, and perhaps I'll go a little further back, and I'm certainly here from the Baltimore area, lived in the Prince George's County a little bit, a little later in my adult life, but I left Baltimore going into the Navy. I considered it a part of my getaway type of transformation, getting my mind right. But I knew that that wasn't my destiny. I realized that I needed to be home where my people were and where my family were so that I could be a positive example, you know, for our community. And so being back here in the Baltimore area, I've always attempted to enlighten myself and many people.
Brother Hakeem.
Yes.
Let me interrupt you.
Sure.
I don't know if you have a couple of things. You might have to mute one of those, one of your items, because there's an echo.
Okay, let me change these mic settings. Wait a minute. Let me go back. How that sound? That sound better? I only got like one mic. How that sound? I don't think it may not be. Let me see. Mic check.
Think it's Hakeem, David. I think.
Yeah, I hear somebody else too in the background.
It may be Satawi's phone. It's not muted. Satawi, mute your phone.
Yeah, I do hear some type of static. I mean, I don't have anything else.
You are muted.
Just...
There you go. Well, Satawi is muted, so let's go.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Bob. So coming back here, I always try to, you know, keep an open mind and try to be as work as wisely as I can and get the right knowledge for our community, for us, and for myself so that I can be an asset first and foremost to myself and then to other people. And that took me to studying various different, what I perceive as our greatest Black teachers and scholars and historians to know thyself and to know which direction we need to aspire towards and go to. So throughout that process, you know, becoming an activist of sorts, because if you're a Black man in America and you don't consider yourself an activist or a revolutionary, something is not right in your mind. And so with that, you know, it took me to understanding that we needed to create industries, that we needed to create our own opportunities for us to progress and prosper within our communities. And so with that, I read vigorously in many different areas of study. So I came to a point I understood that I could not, sometimes you know, when you're pushing entrepreneurial operations, it's okay if you have to kind of go sideways to take another step back and to continue with your ascension, regardless of what you are doing. It's all about your character and your integrity and what you're able to bring to the community asset wise. So, six in the city department. You know, I only have a few more, and I'm still young. I can continue to build my mission. People think that I'm like on Martin. I didn't have. They don't never see me at work. Y'all see. But you know, they see me out doing many different things, and that's how I try to keep it. Like, you never want to just have one revenue stream. You just never want to be, you know, put into a position where you have to rely on anyone or anything. And so with that being said, several years ago, I wrote, you know, a co-authored a book. Many people knew that I was marketing other authors, and I still do market authors' books. And so I co-authored a book with Les Brown and George Frazier, and I did some films with both of them and interviewed several of them. And you know, I've been in a few different documentaries over the years and a few television shows and a few other opportunities, operations. And so I've always thought big, always thought about the world. And there's a saying called think globally, act locally. And the big thing that, you know, I'm going to share with today in terms of, for quite some time, many people knew me. They saw me with the dashiki and the locks for some years. And they knew that I was part of the culture, what they call the conscious Afrocentric community. You know, I think that we all need to recognize who we are, where we come from, and to learn from that, of course, and recognize our roots from where we come. And so many people, you know, always wondered or inquired, like they just assumed that I had traveled to Africa before. And I was like, no, I have not, and I'm always thinking strategically. I mean, I consider understanding we are in battle. I realize that we need to, you know, keep building our allies. And like Dr. John Henry Clark says, we have no friends. Africans have no friends in this world. And so just recently, I just got back from Tanzania. And it was very strategic because many people know I'm also politically active. I was elected in 2018 to the local Democratic State Central Committee, and I serve as the treasurer for a few more weeks, as I'll say, because I'm also on the board of the Maryland Legislative Black Caucus. But, you know, just coming into my understanding of how politics affects business and, you know, affects our lives, you know, it's caused me to be more active and to think, you know, to combine my global analysis with, you know, what I'm seeing here on the ground and from insider type of information. So one thing I always recognize is our need to have a global Pan-Africanist understanding of the world, because many people may not know, and we in the Black community, for instance, we talk about, you know, how various ethnic groups come to America and they set up shop within our communities. And, you know, and I read some things, and I speculate that many of these people, of course, they have education, but I realize that many of them, they have nations behind them. They have, you know, governments behind them that they are supporting foundationally their people coming to America, subsidizing, in fact, them coming to America to snatch resources back that what the United States has kind of captured. Two-thirds of the wealth, or a large percentage of the wealth, is in the Western Hemisphere. And most of the, if you look at the Forbes list, of each year they have a Forbes list of 400. Most of these come from, you know, Western, mostly America. And I think it was Warren Buffett. He said three things that the reason that he was wealthy is he was born in America, born white, and born a male. So I want everybody to think about that. Like, so other than that, if one is not, you know, in that trifecta, in a sense, the possibilities of being in the billionaire group is limited. These are just facts, not, you know, people's, you know, opinions of how you might feel about the wealth realities of this world. But, you know, there's a foundational history of how that became into reality. And so I traveled to Tanzania as part of an international delegation, 28 delegates from all over the world, United States, 10 from the United States, Ghana, South Africa, the Netherlands, Uganda, Rwanda, and of course some local Tanzanians at the University of Tsuba. I'm sorry, University of Bagamoyo, which is Tsuba, is the other name for it. But it's an international art and music university. It's located in historic Bagamoyo. So Bagamoyo actually is the world's one of the first slave ports, actually, that many of the Arabs, how they begin the slave trade in Eastern Africa. But interesting, I learned a lot, and I brought some few books with me. But now Bagamoyo is now like it has the potential to be like the most major export, import-export port city within Eastern Africa. So it was very strategic for me to go there at this time, being motivated by several forces. Of course, it was a little bit less expensive right now. It was to travel phenomenally, certainly to Africa. So I was thinking, okay, due to COVID, but also, you know, just being a global thinker and strategic thinker, I was just like, I don't know what in the hell Donald Trump may, if he were to get elected, but I want to show that I'm ready for whatever he wishes to, you know, to throw out there and get bold and, you know, with this the race problem or whatever it is that they think that they want to do with black people, if they still think they can just, here, this is what we want to do with you. It's not like that. And I'm willing to go home and work wisely with the knowledge that I've gained from reading our historic scholars and reading our business scholars and to build. So I want to, you know, just kind of touch upon, you know, some of the things, and you can, you know, kind of chime me into how much time I have. But, you know, I want to kind of just give a brief sort of overview, because, I mean, the trip we had, like, 12 full days after the amazing conference, I actually moderated a panel, an international panel there on Pan-Africanism. Well, actually, I did a workshop on Pan-Africanism in 21st century, but we had a panel on the Arab slave trade there with, interestingly, it was some expats, some individuals that have repatriated to Tanzania. One was a UNI member from New York. He was the former president. And interestingly, many people know of PETA and Charlotte O'Neill. They were Black Panthers in the 1970s, and they actually have been in Tanzania in exile since 1971. So they really have a very nice, you know, complex there where they, you know, really have been working in the community. So they've done well for themselves living outside of America. So that's PETA and Charlotte O'Neill. So, and several others, but the brainchild of this, and she's a writer for this newspaper. So this is how, you know, our connection, you know, kind of comes full circle is Kim Poole. She's been traveling to Africa for, you know, years, you know, in her 20s. And so now she's around her mid 30s. And so she actually, interestingly, she thought she wasn't going to be able to do this conference this year, but COVID, Tanzania actually stayed open this year, so we decided to do it. So from Bagamoyo, that's where we flew into first, Dar es Salaam, that's like the capital in Tanzania. So then to Bagamoyo, the slave ports, and we have pictures of the actual slave dungeon, the holding cells that they had, or the houses where they held the slaves. So from there, after the conference, we flew up to Zanzibar, which is like, Zanzibar has a lot of like 50 different islands, one called Prison Island. We were in what's called Stone Town, which is the main area in Zanzibar. It has the most lovely beaches there. Went on what's called a spice tour. I mean, Tanzania is known as a spice capital of the world, and various types of herbs are grown there. They have very high vegetation. I mean, most of the people are agriculturalists. You know, you can walk down the street. I mean, in some of the, I guess you would call the suburbs, I mean, they do have the town areas, but, you know, most people have fresh vegetables, like truly fresh. And I mean, I actually lost like 8 pounds, like in like 7 or 8, you know, time I was there, 12 days. I mean, I was like, wow, that's really, you know, different. I've been here trying to knock off pounds for some months. But so to Zanzibar, stayed a few days. We visited some orphanages there. You know, that was the first operation. And then from Zanzibar, we headed to we went up to the mountains up to what's called Arusha. And that's where, you know, Kilimanjaro is. That's like the highest mountain in Africa, actually. Kilimanjaro. So we kind of climbed a little bit. Not, it takes like a week to climb that full mountain. So we didn't, obviously couldn't do all that. So we just did a little bit. And one of the things, you know, was exciting there. We you know, saw how they cultivate coffee there. And I didn't know, and I want to get this validated, but actually Jackie Robinson's son. Or that he's in Tanzania. So it could be both. I thought I read something some years ago that I saw that he was in Kenya, but we did bring some coffee back from the Kilimanjaro. So, you know, if anybody liked that mountain, high mountain coffee, you know, holler at me. But so from there, we took another flight to the Serengeti. That was a charter flight. You can't take like regular planes there. The Serengeti, many people know about the Serengeti. It has like a the largest migration of animals. Like you probably can see them on some of these different geographic channels where all of the wildebeest and the zebras, like 1.5 million wildebeest each year. They go south to escape the heat, I'm sorry, to chase the rain or whatever, you know, where to chase the green grass. So it's like a large, major migration of animals in the world. And so, and it's a big thing. I mean, like literally people travel all over the world to actually see this once a year. So, but you know, that was really interesting to see the different animals in their natural habitat. The little Lion King movie part where they shot the little mountain thing on there, so we took some pictures of that. So yeah, we actually slept outside, so that was really, you know, that was really an interesting thing to you know. I think some people heard some of the animals like right next to us, so that was really something. So from there, where did we go? Oh, the Maasai people. Later we went to see the Maasai people. Many people saw the Black Panther film, of course, and I think that partially they took a lot of that from the Maasai people, and they're no semi-nomadic people. They still live off the land and mostly cattle. They live off of cattle and pretty much that's what they do. I mean, they sell things to tourists now, but there's a major battle between you know, them trying to teach, you know, they want to live their indigenous life, and you know, society and the powers that be trying to get them to modernize and live in houses or you know, I mean, they live in what they build. So it was really interesting. So I really got an opportunity to see how they live and go in their houses where they live. So those are some of the major highlights. I mean, we got like some products that we got from many of them, soap and tea and coffee, you know, some jewelry pieces, a few other things that we got, you know, from there, because Kim is, you know, partnered with several different organizations all throughout in each quadrant of Africa to bring not just for those that may not wish to go to Africa, but bring Africa to individuals on a regular basis. And so I learned a lot, I will say, and I'll, you know, kind of have, you know, people want to answer me some questions, but I learned a lot about business. I mean, a lot of things are different, you know, than the United States in terms of the timing of, you know, the receptivity wasn't as well as we have here in terms of internet and phones, et cetera, as well as, you know, they don't always have like Visa and things like that. They don't accept them even at the hotels and even the airport, you know, didn't accept Visa. I was like, wow, this is like different. And so I tried to be, you know, respectful and just, you know, have an open mind and understand that, you know, historically, many of these countries still suffer from colonialism and lack of, and I'm not going to use the term development, but lack of infrastructure, shall I say, that other countries, because for years people were brought out of these places, so, you know, to build other places. And so that's, you know, the manpower of, you know, our people, you know, throughout the world has always been exploited like that. And so,
Brother Haki.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Let me ask you this. I know, sure. You know, running a little short on time.
Okay.
But
yes,
let me, ask you a few questions, sir.
Sure.
Now that you traveled in the various countries in Africa, and you also, of course, you know, you've been here, you've done been all over the country here, you know, you've mm-hmm. been just about every place here. And now that you had the opportunity to see where our roots came from, and also at the same time, you seen, like you say, how they live and the various things that they do. I mean, I know you couldn't do it all in the short period of time you were there, but you got it, just a glimpse. And now that you've been there, has it changed your opinion about anything, or has it, but I'm trying to ask you this, you know, as an example, I go, you know, like I don't go anywhere. So I went to North Carolina. That's where my father's from. I actually went to the right. graveyard where all my people was buried. And to me, that was sacred. You know, it was like I say, instead of going mm-hmm. back home to Africa, that was the next step. You know what I'm saying? Because that's where my roots came
right.
from. My father, my father's father, and my father's father. Yeah. And so, and when I go to a place like that, I feel empowered. I feel something special. And but since you, like I said, the question I guess I'm trying to ask you is this. Now that you have been enlightened with some of the things in Africa, and then, like I said, because you've been, as you mentioned in your opening statement, that, you know, you've been culturally inclined here in this country, you read a lot, again, has it changed your opinion about what we do here? Or what you've seen that hasn't changed you in any kind of way just by taking that trip?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, I just reflect on understanding that people are still living, you know, a decent life. You know, they're happy in Africa. We, you know, have this materialistic worldview about everything, and sometimes it causes us to have unnecessary stress from what I perceive. You know, I mean, people there are, you know, they don't have as much, but I see that they share, you know, and it's almost like I did not see a lot of like homeless people like really struggling and starving. I mean, you know, it was just like everybody had something to do. Like, you know, I mean, and even though they didn't, I think that I don't know the structure of their society, but I think that America has a lot to learn, you know, about, you know, collectivism. And I think it's ingrained that they actually take care of each other, you know, because I think that the connections in the family, and I think sometimes we throw each other away, you know, for our, you know, differences.
For pieces of silver.
Yes, yes, yes. And so I will say, you know, I mean, the children, I mean, I did not see any children that were, you know, using profanity or like, you know, even the schools that we were in at, none of the children, you know, they were like interested in learning. No disrespect to children here, but I think that I think the power of the media sort of controls and creates you know, this kind of distractions that other societies do not have. And so people have time to focus on what's important. If your parents say that this is important, you don't have any distractions to be rebellious, because it's culturally enforced. And that's, I think.
Let me ask you this, Brother Haki. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to cut you off, because we keep running
problem.
Short for time.
Yes,
but
yes,
you
yes.
know, I used to read the Bible quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time when the people of God, what they call Israelites, whatever, they would go into these lands and they would take on the attitudes or the ways of the people who lived in those lands. They started worshiping their gods and start doing things the way they did things, and it changed them, because they was kind of confused, you know, trying to take on their way this way, and as black people brought to this country, we had to learn to adapt to their type of ways and their way of thinking and their ways of doing things. And it sounds like to me you discovered something.
Mm-hmm.
When you were there, you saw, like I said, they may not have all the electronics and all the little doodads that we have here that we worked so hard that we would kill each other over, you know, and stressing out over. But at the same time, they had something to do where they was at, the way it sounded to me. Everybody had something to do. They were respectful. They shared. And you said one key word, seemed like they was happy. You know, they generally cared about some, you know, things. And to me, knowing my people, that's how, you know, I mean, I see that connection, because I think in general, that's the way we here in this country, our black people, you know, that's where we generally are, you know. But when we start taking on the way, trying to get that almighty dollar and chasing after all these other things, it changes our attitude, and we become aggressive and you know, stressful and everything else. But in any case, we're going to move on, Brother Haki. I appreciate you taking time, brother, because I know you're an extremely busy person. But I'm going to help me jump into this conversation. You're so well-rounded in so many different areas. And you're into politics, you're social, you know, conscious, you're everything, a little bit of everything. And like most people on here as well.
The question I'd like to ask him, and I heard what he said out of traditionalism that we used to have that we don't have anymore because of the dogma that we are under right now. We are similar and alike, but we have not connected the dots the way they still have. And the reason why that is, they are under, like he said, colonialism. We are under, actually impractical and pragmatic slavery. We have pragmatically gone after each other. Most of the crime that are committed amongst ourselves is amongst ourselves, and it's not included by anybody else. So we have, tribal warfare in America compared to the tribal warfare that's in Tanzania or all the other African countries that are not as aggressive as what we are, because we have more weaponry, modern weaponry that we can do more things to one another in a quick and quick fashion. Like, there are over 50 women who have been murdered in our city.
Yes.
50 women. That's a taboo there. They'll get a woman for adultery or something like that, but they will not do what they do to women here as we are. So I hear what he's saying, and I see how he has been a world traveler, and he has the wherefore of what he has and what he's doing with what he has with. But that needs to come here, and we who are leaders, who are community activists such as myself, yourself, and himself.
Who are you anyway?
This is Pastor James. You know who it is. You ain't why I got to tell my name.
Because people don't know who you are, though. That's right.
But we've been on the radio together, Baba.
Everybody and their mother know who I am.
Baby, can I jump in real quick?
Yes, sir.
Hi, hello, y'all. My name is Walt Eugene Dempsey Murphy, and I am the manager of the National Black Unity Community and Brother Aki. Thank you for that wonderful information, man. I appreciate all of what you said. But when you started out talking about wealth and this and that and the other, and some of the privileges that goes along with being an American, one of the most awesome things is what Warren Buffett did say. He said that one of the most beautiful things that made him a success was that he was an American, he lived in America, that he was white, and that he was a male. All that is true. Mm-hmm. Warren Buffett also failed to mention that same set of requirements, is that you need to be blue-eyed, blonde, and a landowner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just want to throw that out there to you guys. Because all of those, without the land and the money, it does not make a difference. You got to have that too, okay? That's what makes you white and American and powerful, okay? It's not the color of your skin, it's your status, okay? And I appreciate that, brother. And I just want to throw that in because it's a beautiful thing to know that America is built on something different. It's not built on character, it's built on a dollar. I just want to share that with you.
Part about that.
Yeah. So back to you, David.
Okay. All right. So I just wanted to ask you, look, I need some information from you all who's listening in right now. Phil has had a few conversations about this. Now, as you know, most of them, because it's all over the news right now, they had this vaccine out right now. As a matter of fact, it's almost in every state right now. Everybody's taking this thing here. Now, we also know those who are of age also can recall Tuskegee Institute, you know, the experiment that they did on the brothers. But they also, right here in Baltimore, the Johns Hopkins and the University of Maryland used to do all these experiments on us as well. And so in the black community, they always had a fear or stay away of this type of situation when it comes to medical system, because we never have been treated fairly, even to this day, you know, in these medical institutions. I listened to a group of nurses today, and they say even in their own, you know, they notice so much stuff that, you know, while they're working. But when they had to go to various hospitals and things like that, had they not told them that they were nurses, they were treated in another type of way, because they, you know, they would have told them who they were, then they know the protocol, you know, how to be treated. But when it comes to this vaccine, I'm just curious, because, you know, it could be a lifesaver or it could take your life. Something, it could be so many, it could have so many side effects, but it can change it. I'm talking about it can be extremely helpful, because we had vaccine polio and things like that we have overcome. But, you know, this scientific world, you know, kind of, especially this vaccine, the way it was produced and the swiftness, I know the urgency of it. But if anybody can jump in, what is your take on this vaccine, or will you take it? I'm starting with you, Hakeem.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'll get right back
to
you, brother. You are unmuted.
Yeah,
I don't know how long this brother has.
Oh, no, I'm on here the whole time, brother.
Okay.
Well, I'm still doing my due diligence, brother. I'm listening to different sources. I'm keeping an open mind.
You're a first responder, right?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did listen to an interview with Dr. Leonard Horowitz. He's a Caucasian gentleman. He wrote the book Emerging Viruses. He believes it is, and I encourage people to look him up. He believes it's part of the population control strategy. Him and Kitty Owadu, another gentleman out in California, as well, Dr. Aleem Muhammad, who's in the D.C. area. So I'm really cross-referencing a lot of that with the tradition, you know, individuals. There was recent, you know, some African-American individuals who were, you know, Dr. Mark Muriel of the Urban League, and, you know, a few other people, that the Freeman Jabowski, like locally, he actually took a shot, you know, I don't know what newspaper it was in, maybe the Sun paper, to show African Americans that it is a safe vaccine. So I am like keeping a strategic open mind, and, you know, and I do know that there is a, there may be a potential religious exemption to it. So, I mean, and I'm not going to say, you know, for, in terms of myself or for other people, because some people may be older and may have health challenges. But I would say if I was old, I would, you know, probably just stand by and watch other people if I didn't necessarily have to. That's what I would say, you know, and see what, you know, other people are experiencing first. I wouldn't want to be in the first.
I hate you. Brother James McEachin, what was you about to say, sir?
Listen. The Henrietta Black story is the one of the most demonstrated stories, more so than the Tuskegee experience, because they are using our stem for life, using her brain stem for life. They have measured everybody else's brain off of her brain, and that's a Black woman. Listen, I have, and I know you had a bout with it yourself, David, but here's the hit for me. And this is spiritual, and nobody's recognizing it. They're giving you a card saying that you took the test, right? This is the mark of the beast. This is the mark of the, this is the herding, the herd concept they talking about, making sure everybody, at least 80, 90% of the people get marked about what they have. You got a little card saying you took the COVID test and you got the vaccine in you. Then you will become another number. So this is something we need to concern ourselves with. I know I've stood the test of time. I've been measured 3-4 times, been negative, and I've worked all the way through COVID since, except when I had to leave the State Anatomy Board. And I did leave the State Anatomy Board because I was not going to bag and tag no bodies, double bag and tag no bodies, and put them in a cardboard box, knowing that they died from corona. So it is hard for us to understand. Now, this is the most terrible time because the breeding of the disease takes place now. It's airborne. It stays in the air. So the cautiousness that we need to be concerning ourselves with is not taking that drug because, again, there are side effects. People have already demonstrated there are side effects, especially if you hereditarily have some allergic reactions because of pollen or the other things that you might be allergic to. So I myself, like him, I'm standing back. I am not taking that vaccine unless I really have to.
Okay, but look, let me say this. You know, on the thing, I like to, what we say, keep it real. And, you know, everybody has an opinion about this. There's nothing wrong with that. Everybody has an opinion. And what say you, Fran?
You know I'm coming from a different place. Hey, Haku. I'm so glad that you made it home safe and healthy and all of that. Look, I'm taking the vaccine. And this is why. We have so many people who won't take the vaccine because of what we do not know about the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
But let me just give you this food for thought.
Mm-hmm.
We do know that palm oil, when turned into a solid, becomes trans fat. And while it keeps processed foods fresh longer, it also raises bad cholesterol, lowers good cholesterol, and increases the risk of developing blood clots and heart attacks. It's a killer in the Black community, and yet we eat processed foods every day. All right? We do know that when whole grain is refined, it loses most nutrients, so it's really not doing our body any good. And while it extends a product's shelf life, it also diminishes the nutrients and fiber of food that then becomes too easy to digest for our bodies and forces blood sugar and insulin levels higher, leading to diabetes, another killer in the Black community. And we eat refined foods, processed foods every day. by choice. Nobody's making us do this. Nobody's giving us a vaccine. We go into the store spending our money for this stuff that we know over time is going to kill us. So we do that. We know that high fructose corn syrup makes food sweet. That's why we love it. But it also increases triglycerides, boosts fat-storing hormones, and drives people to overeat and gain weight. That also leads to higher risk for heart disease, diabetes, pressure on your joints, high blood pressure, stroke, sleep apnea, and respiratory illnesses, and fatty liver disease, just to name a few, because I know my time is really limited. But all of those things are also killers in the Black community, and we go eat high fructose corn syrup every day. Every day, we are consuming these things. And let's talk about smoking. We do know that smoking cigarettes changes blood chemistry, and not for the better. Smoking leaves you vulnerable to blood clots that can cause heart attacks and block blood flow to your heart, brain, and legs. Smoking cigarettes has also been proven to cause cancer in almost everywhere in your body. It's another killer in the Black community. And we still smoke cigarettes and cigars every day. Every day. Okay? So we're talking about, well, I'm not taking the vaccine because I don't know nothing about it. But you go to the store and get all this stuff that you know is going to kill you and you eat it every day. It doesn't make any sense. So this is where I am. I don't know about anybody else. I don't know about what you're considering to make your decision to or not to take the vaccine. But this is where I am. I have a choice of dying from COVID-19 or taking my chances with the vaccine. Now, I don't take chances with my cholesterol. I lost 25 pounds during this pandemic so I could control my weight and reduce the pressure on my joints and reduce the risk of heart disease because it's prevalent in my family. I stopped drinking sodas and sugary juice drinks. I replaced them with plain green tea and water. I cut my food portions in half. And what used to be one meal, because I could eat. I'm from the Midwest. I ain't no salad chick. I want some meat and potatoes, okay? But I know that if I want to live long, I got to do some things different. Change does not come without making changes. I say it all the time. So what I used to use for one meal now feeds me for two meals, okay? You got to make some changes. I never smoked cigarettes or anything else. I never drank alcohol. I never did any other kind of recreational drinking. I'm crazy enough. I am off the chain all right already, and I don't need none of that stuff to make me any better or any livelier or to have any more fun. I choose to do what I want to do because I can. I live my life the way I want to because I'm able to. And, you know, I serve a God that sits high and looks low. So I'm not scared of all the other stuff like some people are. I don't trot my faith out when it's convenient. I step on it all the time. And sometimes I look down and I don't see no ground. And I'm like, Lord, you got me levitating. But, you know, it's a choice. It's a choice. So I just think that we shouldn't let what we don't know stop us from choosing life, especially when we choose death with all the things that we do know about our food and beverages that we eat and drink every day anyway. So you can give it a reason or you can make an excuse, but it's all the same. It's a choice. I'm choosing the vaccine, and then I'm going to go on a trip to Africa too. That's my story, and I'm sick.
Let me jump in real quick. Fran, and all you guys, y'all are on point. It is a matter of consciousness and physical ability to accept the vaccine. As a clinician, vaccines are what they are, and your body is what it is. And unfortunately, what will help me may kill every one of you.
That's right.
I mean, dead in minutes, okay? And for me, it'll help me live one extra day or two, okay? And what I'm sharing with you is there are some older folks. There are some folks, like you said, that already have some preconditions that may absolutely harm you. They already know these things, okay? There are a number of things out there that when it comes to vaccines and things of that nature, I'm a witness. I'm here. Polio, all of the other vaccines that have been over the years, they do have its place in our society. When it comes to this vaccine, unfortunately, it came at a horrible time. We had an individual in the office that was pushing something, pushing bleach and all kinds of stuff, and it made it very difficult for anybody to trust what he was trying to get out. But at the end of the day, right now, this moment, each and every one of you on this call, and you have to be a smart person. You have to be wise. You have to be the best doctor on the planet for yourself. Back to you, David.
Well, I want to make one more comment. This vaccine did not... Everybody talks about how the development of the vaccine was expedited. It really was not the development of the vaccine that was expedited. It was the process by which the vaccine got approved to be distributed that was expedited. Okay, the science that created the vaccine has been going on for years. And it just got to a place now where they were beginning the trials that would allow the vaccine, because they had to develop something before they could put it in your arm. They didn't just throw some stuff together in a bucket, stir it around, put it in the syringe, and shoot somebody with it. That stuff had been in development for many years. It was, again, the process by which they could get the approval to distribute it, which means they had to test it on some people. Or they had to develop it before they could test it. So don't get those two things confused. The development of the vaccine is not what was expedited. The process by which they could get the approval in order to distribute it widely in the citizenry for the United States was the thing that they expedited, that process, okay? And so they expedited the process. Well, okay, they expedite all kinds of things. They expedited their stimulus the first time. They dragging their feet on this one. Can we get them to expedite that? Come on.
You know what I'm all right, Cynthia Jahi, you want to say something?
Yes, good evening, everyone. When you don't know your history, you are bound to repeat it. Some of you remember what happened with the blankets that were given to the Native Americans, and they gave them smallpox without conscience. It's a fact. In 1976, my dad and I decided to take the swine flu vaccine. I was about 19 years of age. We both took the vaccine, and thank God we both did fine. However, between 1,500 and 2,000 or more other Americans who took the exact same vaccine, they died, and they died within 2 or 3 days. Now, I'm going to tell you something about that vaccine. Yeah, it was tested and all the things that the people are saying, but what they did was a switcheroo. They found out later that the vaccine that they announced, just like they're announcing this vaccine, that it was tested, it's ready. That was not the vaccine that they gave people. Now, this information I've just come across, but I will tell you this here. In 1976, for several months, almost into a year, my dad and I were worried, scared to death, because people were dying across this country. That is a fact. The other thing about the vaccine is that there was a part one and a part two. They never reported what happened to the people who took part two. Of course, I'm here today because I did not take part two. But I just want you to know that this is the exact same story. Saying it's pushed out to people. You're told that it's fine. People died. I'm not talking about something that I think I know about. I took the vaccine. I lived. I listened to the news, and I saw where people actually died. So for me, I have not taken a vaccine since 1976. I've had the other little flus maybe one or two times. I have had the flu in my life, okay? And I'm going to do what Fran said. I'm going to continue being careful with what I eat. I am overweight right now. I know what I have to do. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to concentrate on what I need to do to take care of me. Yeah. You want to take the vaccine? That's on you. Also, you need to know the fact. Bill Gates and a lot of these people, we're talking billionaires. They don't like the population that's on this planet right now. And my suggestion to them, like I told a lot of other people, you know, when you're all dressed up and you walk into a room and it's too crowded, it's time for you to leave. My suggestion to Bill Gates is the planet is too crowded. He needs to leave. He got enough money to take a spaceship and go somewhere. But for me and my family, no, I'm not taking the vaccine. But for you, you do what you want to do. 1976, look it up. CBS News, they did reports on it. And what's his name, Rizlam? He did also, this, the Nation of Islam has done some research on it, showing where they did a switcheroo. Some people got the vaccine that was announced, and some people got the vaccine that killed over 2,000 people. Thank you so much.
Okay.
And we need to make sure that we understand a book called Radical American Apartheid. I don't know if Hakeem's familiar with that book, but there's a book that was written. It talks about the disparities in the American healthcare system, and you call it American Medical Apartheid.
I got one more thing. I'll be very quick. I want one more thing I want to share with you all. Somewhere in about 1994, my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer to her right breast, okay? I'm sitting across the table with my mother and her doctor for the information about the what she was going to make a decision on. Okay, God led me to pick up a pamphlet on my way to this meeting with my mom's doctor. The pamphlet gave you alternatives. The alternative was a lumpectomy, which meant that instead of taking my mother's whole breast off, they had the choice to take just the part that they saw where the lump was, put that under a microscope, and figure out what they were going to do with it. I sat there with my mom, who at the time was like in her 60s, and she was like the type of person that would do whatever her doctor say do. Doctor say do something, she do it. She's going to do what the doctor said. I said, excuse me, doctor, what about this pamphlet I have in my hand? It says take a look. You know, you have a choice of lumpectomy. What is that? She says, your mother probably don't want to do that. If she's like me, she's probably very busy and she doesn't want to have time getting radiation and chemo. I said, excuse me, my mother got all the time in the world because my mother was a housewife at the time. Okay? So she wasn't rushing off to go to do any jobs, anything like that. They were going to take my mother's entire breast off. My mother was in her 60s. My mother listened to me. Thank God. All I can say is God directed me to a little pamphlet in the hallway of this particular hospital. I think it was Sinai Hospital. My mother got a lumpectomy. They took an inch of her breast out of her breast, that fat tissue with the cancer in it. My mother just died this year at 92. And guess what, y'all? She had some nice bosoms. You hear me what I'm saying? She had two healthy breasts until the day she died. So you got to figure this stuff out for yourself. And you got to dig deep. You got to pray. And you got to look around and get the research, Brother Dempsey said. It's a lot of research out here. But my mother could have had a double mastectomy if we just listened
money
to
money making thing.
That's right. She just died at 92 years old with both her breasts. Yeah. I'm talking about full, healthy breasts, okay? So I just want to share that story with y'all. Thank you so much.
Well, let me say this in closing, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate all the comments because, like I say, it's a damn if you do and a damn if you don't situation that we're in right now. And I do know, like I said, I'm old enough to know when they were snatching people off the streets and stuff. You know, I'm old enough to know. You know, black people have done research, and we already, it's a known fact that they experiment on it, and they still is. But we also, it's a known fact when they had the world summits years ago, and they still talk about what we're going to deal with, the overpopulation and this, that. So they chose to deal with the other thing because, like I say, they say this world is going to be overpopulated with the type of people. I'm talking about we the ones was producing. And so they're going to have to cut back on so many people and everything. And so they chose, that's when the AIDS, all the stuff popped up and everything else started popping up, And so, and I've always been very suspicious because, everybody know I've been doing a newspaper for a long time. And I used to get nightmares. I used to be scared to die. I used to be scared. I'm serious. I used to be scared to walk the streets because when I had that newspaper, The Informer, I used to get anonymous letters from people. And they would send me these letters, and it didn't have no address or nothing, or just had my name, the name of the paper, and they sent it to me. They say, I want you to be aware, you need to let people know that this is taking place. I work in a government facility, and these type of experiments are going on. And this, that, but I was smart enough to know not to put it, because I'd have been dead the next day, because that stuff they said was classified. And I should get this type of stuff. But then if you read and you do research sometimes, yes, there's all type of conspiracies that take place, especially on us. But then on the other hand, like I say, recently, Everybody know I had a bout with this COVID. And I was sitting laying up in the hospital bed, and I talked to the nurses and things like that. And they were saying about the number of people that's dying, that they had the watch to die, and they people died alone. And they were talking just about all of us know somebody who knows somebody, family members have been affected, and a lot of people are dying right now this day at a record number all over the world. And so if you sit back and do nothing, because like I say, some of them lives with this vaccine can possibly be saved. And people like us, I'm looking at the age group on here, you know, we in that group that, you know, you have to be, you know, our little grand, that little sweet grandchild of yours, can daddy, pop, pop, and that's it for you. You know, and stuff like that. And, you know, and like Fran said, you know, there's some things we can stay away from. You can die, you can eat that. But look, my little grandson, I might take a chance on it. I don't know. You know, that love runs deep like that. But, you know, but sometimes, you know, in the situation I'm in, you know, because I don't know. And one thing about me, I love about myself with this. When I don't know, I go to God. God, I don't know. You're going to have to guide me on this one. Because based on my wisdom and my knowledge, I'm not sure. Because I'm very skeptical of them. Always have been, and I have reason to be. But at the same time, we all know when we had polio and TB and all them other things that were circulating in my lifetime. A lot of people, because I used to see them little children in the little braces and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think God knows I didn't want that to happen to me. They used to scare me to death. I see the March of Dimes commercials. You know, it used to scare me to death to see that stuff, you know, if I ended up like that. And, you know, and so they play on your consciousness, but at the same time, it kind of got wiped out, measles and everything else, you know. So some things, you know, can work. I mean, and God worked through man. You have to think about that. And God worked, you know, the people are crying out. And who do you think he worked through? Us, you know, doctors and everybody else. And so that's why I say it's a catch-22 when I open up the statement, because damn if you do and damn if you don't. You, like you say, but everybody has to make a choice. But what I'm going to make one suggestion, and this I do know work. But even you are atheist, I don't care what the David Murphy knows. As I said to y'all before, when I was in hospital bed, and I said to y'all individual, when I talked to you, prayer works.
Yeah.
I mean, it really works, because if you really have to pray about some things. I mean, pray in earnestly. Mm-hmm. I don't know, God. I don't know. You got to help me on this
exactly.
one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, if y'all think COVID is something, wait till you find out about this new thing that's about ready to happen. They are microwaving our brains. Yeah, hello. There's a guy who's being studied right now who was in Russia. They was doing microwaving.
Oh, I seen.
5G is the precursor of microwaving our brains.
Yeah,
it's happening.
It is.
Well, you know, but we all know, you know, like I said, military and scientists, they're always in the lab trying to build a better system to kill people. You know, like I said, through the airways, all kinds of ways. You know, through the water. That's why you think they're putting them over the reservoir. They're putting that stuff underground because they think they can drop this in the water and kill all of us.
Right?
I mean, you know, they got all kinds of germ warfare. And not only germ warfare, you've seen what happened to the government. Cyber warfare. They got all types of warfare that's taking place. You know, and so, I mean, they can get you one way or the other if they want you.
But the Nostradamus say we are fulfilling the word. The word says that this would take place. He knew it way back when. He was called a crazy man. But he is telling us the truth.
Remember the Tower of Babel, where man came too damn smart for himself. Yeah, you know, thought he could be like God, to control who can live and who dies, you know.
The Tower of Babel was the World Trade Center. Y'all might as well know that was the truth. Okay. The World Trade Center was the Towers of Babel. That was the modern day. That's why the Arab nation went to go get it. Because they knew that was the Towers of Babel. They were beyond above the clouds. So, yes, all this stuff is being told. the 100-year diseases has been told, the bubonic plague, the Spanish flu, now COVID. But COVID really started in 1619 and not 2019. Because when they brought us from Africa to here, they enslaved us, and our minds have been imprisoned ever since. We have not caught this whole attitude and idea. We ain't free. We are not free. We are subjugated to what the government says. I've been teaching this for a while because spiritually we are weakened because of 232 chapters of the Bible instead of the 1189 chapters in the book. And we have not gotten it because the man who came from England, the English missionaries came here and gave us what they wanted us to have. And then when they stopped having us stand behind ropes behind the Methodist Episcopalian Church, before it became African Methodist Episcopalian Church, we stood behind the rope trying to learn the word, and they kept showing us in the word that the Bible says we are your masters and you are our slaves. And it talks about slavery all through the Bible. The Bible is so coded that a lot of people don't understand that if you get the very essence of what it has. That's why I went to the Bible Museum in Washington, D.C., and I spent 40 hours learning some stuff that I never would have known. There is a slave Bible, and that's the Bible that we are governed by. That's the edict. That is the manifestation of what we live by every day. That's why when auditory conversations come from pastors and preachers and lay folk, as that stuff is handed down to them, and they refine it, they regurgitate it constantly and continuously every time the same way, and we get all hyped up and all proud. But there is so much in the book, like who's Adam's first wife? You don't know because you ain't been taught. Who born Jesus into this world? You don't know because you ain't been taught. You're not even really told what happened in the Garden of Eden, correct me. But there's so much poison and so much cynicism in this world that now, like I said, we are trapped into idolatry. We are trapped into socialism. We are trapped into gangsterism. You name it, we're doing it, and we are not as spiritual as he said they are in Tanzania, because that's where it's spirituality. If we would go back years ago, when Daddy Grace and all of those guys were around, they took care of their people in Harlem. They took care of their people to make sure they wasn't hungry or starving and didn't have. The neighborhood took care of itself. You couldn't come in the neighborhood and sell drugs. You couldn't come in the neighborhood and do nothing. Your doors would be open. You could leave and come back. All of that good stuff. You know, in Emerson Village, nobody could come up there and mess with the Murphys.
That's true.
Now, you know I know that, right?
Yeah.
Because I was a part of y'all for a minute.
Yeah, but you know, like I say, you know, from spirituality to science and to man, they say don't put your trust in man. But you know, man, but we got to trust each other some form or another. Because, you know, we go turn that light switch on, it comes on. You know, because man did this and man did that. But again, like I say, that's why I say, you know, pray, because there's a lot of things in this world that we don't know. We just don't know, because behind those closed doors, you don't know who's doing what and when they're going to do it. But I tell you one thing, you do see the results of it. And the only thing I can suggest to you, that's why I said in closing, that you just have to pray, because we don't know it all. But, you know, we do have an opinion and we can research. But what you can do, you can add years to your life, you can take some away. And like Fran say, if you do some of the right things, the basic thing, you got just, you know, you just can't be worried about COVID. Like you said, you got to be worried about that soda, the sugar. You got to be worried about a lot of things. You know, you got to be worried even about us.
I mean, we
kill each other just quickly as anything else around here, you know. You know, look at Baltimore alone, 300-something murders a year. That's us. That's just the people got murdered. What about the ones got shot and stabbed and everything else? You know?
Yeah, there's 1,100 shootings in Baltimore City.
See, you know, and I'm up in Emerson, and they shooting all around me, murders all around me all the time. They take care of somebody marching around here. But at the same time, I just hope and pray for each and every one of you that, you know, you make the right decision. And no matter what, even like they say, man, I know the brother can help me. I'm not no scholar when it comes to the word, but I have read it quite a bit. And God can turn, even though man had meant things were evil to you, God can turn it for your good.
And for good, yeah.
And so, you know, those darts that you threw at me, you meant to harm me. You know, God can turn that around and turn it for good, you know.
So
that's why, you know, that's why I say pray up. Because some things you don't know. God said the things that you see can kill you, but the things that you don't see can kill you even quicker. You know, and that you're not aware of. And if God had revealed things to you, if you would open your eyes and see, you would shock yourself. You'd be scared. I mean, you just couldn't do it. But in any case, ladies and gentlemen, we've been on here for some time now. And I want to thank each and every one of you. But at the same time, y'all be careful out there, because that virus is for real.
Yeah.
And hopefully, because people are taking this thing, that's for real. The vaccine is for real too. That's going to help people. But you know, in everything in life, you have to have be cautious about something. But not to the point where you're so scared that you can't live your life. I mean, don't be a fool out there, because like I say, but try to live your life a healthy life and hope and pray that everything will turn out. You know, and I hope the vaccine does work, because it would be nice. Just to walk amongst men again, to break bread with people.
Well, y'all need to. The Lord God closed the doors to the building, and we're trying to open the building back up. He did this on purpose, so that, like you said, to go back to the old landmark. We need to go back to the old landmark. When there was no air conditioning in the building, we stayed all day. When we always considered and looked on everybody, seeing about everybody. I do a wellness check on people all the time. I check on people. I checked in your sister not too long ago to make sure everything is good and everything's going on. If you touch and reach somebody, go into your phone and call somebody you haven't talked to in a minute. See if they are all right. Not let them fall through the cracks too far. This is a terrible time. Mm-hmm. I'm getting ready to write a book about From the Cradle to the Grave Syndrome. Halloween, the demons are let loose, and they're not calmed down to Resurrection Sunday, because suicide, domestic violence, pornography, child abuse, all this stuff is a consecration and concentration place now, and you see it because the House of Rupert is full. The courtrooms are crowded when they were open. With domestic violence, men beating on women. But more men in Baltimore City are domestically violently beaten on than women are. Most people don't know that. Mm-hmm. More men get beaten domestic violently than women do. But women do claim they've been beaten by men, and because a woman claims that a man goes through the process and have to prove that he didn't do it. So there's so many things that are going on in our society and in our metropolitan area that we need to pay attention. That, again, like I said, a lot of us who are coming together now, I wish more would get on the line with you, David. I do when I can, because I'm involved in so many conferences. I wish we could all come together and have summits more often. I know we got to do it on the phone right now like you do, but you need to start developing a summit and start sending out a mailing list to about 100 men or 100 people so that we can all come together and start strategizing for next year, because this is just the beginning. This is just the beginning.
Well, I can say this. This year was a doozy night. I mean, just for everybody globally. You know, we ain't seen, you know, like in my lifetime, you know, our whole lifestyles has changed and the whole economic system. But in any case, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to have to get up off of here. And again, I want to thank each and every one of you. Now, if anybody, you know, if you have something to say, y'all can talk afterwards, but I'm leaving. I got to go. but like I say, man, pray up. That's only a suggestion I can come up with. Just pray up and pray to God that you make the right decision, whatever, which way you should go. And I believe God will direct your path. So thank you.
Don't forget the National Black Unity News networking call tomorrow night, 7:30.
That's right. And I'll call you tomorrow about that.
Okay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, good night. Tomorrow, 7:30, same time. But it's going to be a different call number, though.
Okay, great. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Good night.
This meeting is being recorded. Goodbye.
Okay, that concludes our broadcast here on Blog Talk Radio on Home Based Business 101. I want to thank everybody that tuned in from the Blog Talk Network and those that listen through the Zoom network. So until next time, take care and God bless.